a brand new episode of the Happy Productive Podcast is about to begin. It's time to be inspired by simple and actionable solutions for you and your business. If you're an established entrepreneur or just laying down the first brick of your future empire, the mantra is the same. We will flip any failure into a positive and use it to our advantage. This show is all about turning coal into diamonds. With the right plan and mindset, anything is possible. I'm Jennifer Dawn, your host, business coach, and founder of Best Planner Ever, and I'm here to help you achieve all your ambitious goals. Success is closer than you think. Let's do this. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of the Happy Productive Podcast. I know you're going to love my guest today, and I cannot wait to jump in and start having a conversation with this amazing woman, Danielle Sundberg. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jennifer. Happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys, Danielle is an award-winning author and TEDx speaker, and she coaches high performers on authentic leadership, but she has a really amazing story. And so Danielle, let's just dive right in. Tell us a little bit about your previous life as a litigator and how that all kind of shifted and changed for you, because I just really want to hear about this litigation that you did for against a $6 billion judgment. Like, that's pretty significant. So just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the 6 billion number, that can only happen when the government's involved and there's punitive damages and treble damages and all these things on the table, because that's, you know, crazy. Yeah, so my act one of my professional life was as a corporate litigator for a big law firm in Washington, D.C. And when I graduated from law school, that was the holy grail for a young new lawyer, is to get this coveted position in, you know, sort of the ivory tower of the profession. And so I did everything that I could. It's a very, you know, typical professional trajectory. It's get the higher education, work really hard, blood, sweat, and tears, take every, you know, fellowship and internship and position, and, you know, make that resume look just as powerful as you can. And I was in Washington, D.C., and the thing about Washington, D.C. is you basically are a walking resume. That's sort of how people see you. So when I got this job at my law firm initially, I had this exhale experience that I hadn't realized. I felt I had been holding my breath for like 15 years. And, you know, finally I had made it. I was essentially, when you peel away all the layers of what was going on internally, I was enough. I was allowed to take up that space in the world. I had proven myself. And everybody looked at me the way that I needed them to look at me, which was with respect, that I was this competent, intelligent DC attorney who had made it. And so in their eyes, I saw a reflection of myself that was like, ooh, this is really somebody. I'm really somebody. And that was, you know, my ego really liked that. That's what I was working so hard for. But over time, I'd come home at the end of the day and I'd look at myself in the mirror, and in my own reflection, I saw nobody. My eyes were completely empty. Like, there was just nobody home inside that nice Ann Taylor suit. Nobody was home. And, you know, I was experiencing the thing of 80-hour work weeks and, you know, at the beck and call of a partner who needs research at 2 a.m. And especially during this trial, you know, the 80-hour work weeks, they go even higher because you're working around the clock, really. And so, you know, burnout was... it just was like, yeah, that's just what happens when you're in trial. You experience burnout. Like, that's the cost of the golden handcuffs experience. And it was all just very acceptable. Mm-hmm. And so I was diagnosed with depression. And the depression was what confused me, because I thought I was getting where I wanted to go. I was at the top of the corporate, you know, ladder, and sitting on top of my big pile of achievements and my zeros in my bank accounts and my prestige and my awards and all that. And so I was confused, like, why would I be depressed? And only now, looking backwards, can I connect the dots and really understand what was going on, of course. But I had all these role models around me. My entire life were around being really highly competent. Both my parents are attorneys. Like, everything. I was swimming in a soup of be competent. And I had that. But the thing that I didn't realize that I was missing, I didn't even know was important, was a connection to myself. And I had no idea who I was underneath all the things that I could do. And then after this trial ended and I flew home, the partner on the case called me. And, you know, I had just landed. And I pick up the phone. He goes, "Danielle, great news. We won." And I said nothing. And I felt nothing. And then after a beat, I said, "I quit."
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I had no plan in place, no job lined up. This was not a prudent decision by any rational means. And I decided to leave Washington, D.C., leave my career behind and backpack the world for 2 years, exploring who I am when, you know, I didn't have to be this persona that I had worked so hard for. And like, who am I really if I could peel that away?
Yeah.
And that's really what is in my book, Atlas of Being. It's that exploration of fundamentally, what does it mean to be human when we're committed to a truth that exists underneath waking up every day, being committed to consistency of being the same person.
Yeah. Yeah. That is amazing. Okay. So you went out and for 2 years, were you backpacking, traveling the world? Like, and were you by yourself or were you with other people?
Yes, I was backpacking. That is one of the hardest things I've ever done is choose what clothes go in a backpack that you're going to have for like this really short amount, you know, of space. And I was with my husband. We got married about a month after I left my firm. And then 5 days after we got married, we left for Thailand.
Wow. Wow. It's so funny. Me and my husband, we ride motorcycles. And when we go out on a bike trip, like we have to literally fit everything into a case that goes on the side, very similar, about the same amount of space as in a backpack. And you really, it's really a great practice to just dwindle it down to the bare essentials, because I think that we carry so much crap with us, literally and figuratively, that when you have to really drill it down into, it's got to fit in a backpack, all my essentials. I think that's just, it's a really neat process to go through to just realize how much stuff we're carrying around that we don't really need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it's so nice to get rid of it because it was connected to a piece of me that I was wanting to let go of anyway.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's that really lovely process of when you let go of something, you create space for something new to show up.
Yeah. So then how did that lead you to today, the work that you do around authentic leadership?
Yeah. So the question that I was exploring, this fundamental question that we're never taught to ask ourselves, who am I, has been my fuel ever since that day that I said I quit. And the thing about that journey of going inward and self-exploration is that it's never over, right? Like the answer you get today is not necessarily the answer tomorrow or in 5 years from now or 10 years from now. And I think for a lot of people, the question can be really intimidating because at one level, of course, you know who you are. You are with yourself all the time. You're a woman, you're a mother, you're a friend, you like to garden, you're tall. Like there's things about you that you know. Mm-hmm. But when we ask that question, who am I? It's asking it from this really deep level that whether we want to consciously recognize or not, it's asking of us to go deeper than those sort of surface or identities, roles that we have. And that can look like a black box. Mm-hmm. And we go, oh, no, thank you. I'm just going to stay in this safe, you know, sort of square that I've created for myself of who I am supposed to be and who I show up as in the world. I'm this competent, intelligent DC attorney. That could have been who I was for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. But the question is so fascinating to me. It's the most fun question. And I experience a longing in the question of a knowing of something that I don't yet know. Mm-hmm. And I think for some people that longing can feel painful. It can feel almost like a grief experience or a shame. Like, shouldn't I know who I am? But for me, it's an experience of love, of wanting to know and embrace myself that has led me to, you know, when I started my company that I now exited, it was around what does it look like to build something that really reflects who I am without bringing in the corporate paradigm reflexively, because that's what I know. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first experience to get to do that. And as I was, you know, building this company and then starting a family, and people around me looked at me and they said, how are you doing this in your life? Like, what are you doing differently? Because kind of from the outside looking in, it can look sort of similar. Mm-hmm. But they saw clearly I was home. There was somebody in the mirror. And it kind of brought me into coaching just naturally of this path of, okay, well, it requires you to commit to this question. Mm-hmm. And follow it where it goes and trust that it's going to lead you somewhere that's going to really, really catapult your life to where you really want to be, despite where your mind might think you should be.
Yeah. So I'm really curious, like, I know we have a lot of business owners listening to this right now that I know can resonate with, like, I've been, here's this goal, here's who I am. I'm like going. I'm burning the midnight oil. I'm putting in all of these hours, because I know I've done this on all of my businesses where it's just like, you just kind of work relentlessly until you get to a place where you're just like, oi, I cannot do this anymore. Now, not everybody can just like quit their job and be like, I'm out of here for 2 years and I'm going to go travel the world. Not that I'm sure a lot of us might want to do that, but like, I know there are people listening right now who want to answer this question, but maybe they can't just like leave everything behind and go travel for 2 years and figure it out. So what advice would you have for somebody who maybe is like, they're in their business, maybe they're starting to feel that burnout, that stress, that depression? It's interesting because this is what my new book is coming out in April 30th. And it's called, you know, How to Rekindle the Love for Your Business. Because I see this with so many business owners. We parade around with, these are my revenues. People are like, we should be parading around with what our profits are. But that's another show. But we parade around and we put on a smile because people are looking to us for guidance and leadership. And we're smiling on the outside, and often we're dying on the inside, and we're not really having this conversation. We're not really talking about this. And so I would love to hear from you, like, what advice do you have for somebody who maybe is feeling the stress, they're feeling the burnout, the overwhelm, they're smiling on the outside to everybody, but maybe they're not in a position where they can just quit and leave it all behind. And so what guidance would you have for them on how to kind of step in and start answering this question of who am I?
Yeah, that's a great point. And to be clear, I have been burnt out since leaving my law firm. I've had that experience again, and I didn't just throw it all in the garbage and go off on another world adventure. I mean, now I have kids and it's like a whole different experience. And so that is certainly not necessary. What I tell my own clients is, so first of all, burnout, look, this is a little controversial to say, but it's not just a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It's not just a bad thing, because what happens, and I'm sure you can speak to this way more than I can speak to this, you're writing a book about it, but when you burn out, you truly burn away all the things that don't really belong to you. And whether or not, you know, you can juggle all those balls still, or you just have to drop some, good for you for dropping them, because guess what? They needed to be dropped. Yeah. And despite the shame or experience of I'm a failure, or that inner critic voice that can pop in and say, you should be able to do it all, right? Like, that's my mom's voice. You should be able to do it all. You know what? That is the voice of an inner critic. It is not who you are. And when we let it go, then you get to really focus on what's actually your real fuel, mm-hmm. which is your inspiration. When I'm burned out, I literally cannot do the things that I do not want to do. I feel like a slippery fish. Like, I just can't do them. They just somehow can't get done. I can only do the things that truly I just wake up and have the energy for.
Yeah.
So the thing that I would say is, you know, if you don't want to run, slam into the wall and have the experience of, you know, just collapsing on the floor in tears, and which is what happens to me when I get burnt out, is to catch yourself before that, right? Notice those signs of stress and overwhelm or feeling drained or feeling like you're looking in the mirror and you're not seeing yourself in your own eyes, and then slow down. That is so the opposite of what we're taught to do. We're taught, you know, work harder, get through it, find more time. But the truth is, if we can just let it all go for a couple minutes, we have so much room that we create for clarity and insight and creativity and resourcefulness and resilience and truth and laser focus of what really needs to get done.
Yeah, I love this so much. And I definitely resonate with it because it's so funny when I work with a client and they come to me and they're super burned out. My initial reaction is always like, awesome. Because you know that when you're like in it, it's hard to see and receive information in other ways. But I do think that with burnout can actually come so much clarity because we do get to a point where we're ready to just stop and we're ready to listen and be receptive to doing it a different way because we've just done it our way so long and so hard and so fast that we just literally physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, we just can't do it that way anymore. And as a coach, like, I love it because it's like, awesome. Now you're in a place where you can receive and you can really listen to the guidance, the feedback, these things. And so I'm with you 100%. I think burnout can be a very, very good thing when you like seek some help or some clarity or some feedback, you know, of not, I don't want burnout to be like your only way of going, of course, but when you get to that place, it can be a very pivotal, powerful moment in your life when you're really ready to like, let me look at a different way of doing this. And it can create some very, very powerful shifts in your life if you can look at it in that way, which sometimes can be hard to do if you're collapsed on the floor crying, which I've been there too. Cry it out. Pick yourself up. And know, especially if you're listening to this show and you're feeling it right now, just know it doesn't mean that it's the end. It doesn't mean that you're all alone. You're the only person who's ever experienced this. Not true. So many people have been through this. And it can actually be the start of a new beginning, I feel like, when you've gotten yourself to that point.
Yeah. Look, so many of us are high performers in the sense that we live for the pursuit of excellence and we know how to push ourselves. And so that because that's what we can do really well, we keep doing it until, right, we collapse. And it could be burnout or it could be getting, you know, a health diagnosis, you know, high cholesterol or heart disease, or it can be a relationship falling apart. It can be anything that's happening that requires you to then go, okay, I've tolerated enough suffering here and I'm actually going to make a change. But until you hit that point, whether it is slamming against the wall of burnout or getting, you know, the diagnosis that, you know, could have a heart attack at any time. Sometimes we ignore it because we're just so good at pushing that we just want to focus on that thing that we know how to do well.
Yeah, you're making a great point because I realized as I've gone through some of these shifts, I did find myself literally saying like, wait a second, Jen, you don't know how to do this any other way. Like the only way you know how to do it is to just get in there, give it 100%, you know, go 100 miles an hour. It's like, wait, I don't know, right? I don't know any other way of handling my life because it's just like, this is how I've always done it. So it really is almost like a reprogramming of starting to relearn and do things in a different way. I'll tell you a funny side story, high achievers, right? I had such a hard time taking vacation and then relaxing on vacation. I had a really hard time and then I would feel guilty. And I know so many business owners do this too, where you're just like, first of all, I shouldn't be taking time away. Secondly, you know, I shouldn't be doing other things when I'm on my vacation. And so I was like, how can I use this to my advantage? And so I took my little high performer and I'm like, all right, Jen, you're going on vacation and you're going to do vacation better than anybody else. And you're going to rest better than anybody ever did it. You're going to take a nap better than anybody ever did it. And there was something about that that literally flipped my brain and was like, oh, now if I have to rest and disconnect better than anybody else, I can do that. Crazy, but it works. And now, like, I can rest and take a vacation with the best of them. But literally, I had to like use that high performance, whatever that is, that drive to flip it, because otherwise I just couldn't like really ever get disconnected.
That is an amazing story. That's so true. That's so powerful. Yeah, it's not about saying, hey, you're really skilled at doing things really well and pushing really hard, and now you shouldn't do that anymore. Yeah. It's just switching the paradigm to use it in a way that maybe we're not used to using it. My mentor said to me, you know, if you're in a day where you only have 20% in the tank, do 100% at 20%. Right? So yeah, it's the same exact thing.
I love that. Yeah, it's true. I mean, so many days when we're tired, like you'll like beat yourself up for being tired. And it's just like, just stop. I'm like, I can still work tired. I can work sad. I can work angry. I can work all these different things, but like, don't add that extra layer on top of ourselves, because it just drains our energy even more. And then we're beating ourselves up. And it's just like, whatever. I love that. I'm at 20% today. So I'm going to show up and give 100 at 20%. I love it. So good. So talk to me a little bit about your coaching around authentic leadership. Like, how would you even like define authentic leadership these days?
So I talk a lot about shifting out of relentless doing, which is our culture's currency of self-worth, essentially, right? We like value ourselves based on our productivity, which is how we end up talking so much about burnout. And shifting out of that and mastering the art of being, which is what is left when we stop all of our doing. Mm-hmm. And being is the place where we access those innate skills that are really the things that are going to get us where we want to go, like resilience, creativity, compassion, perseverance, resourcefulness, all of those things. So when I talk about what authentic leadership is, it's the same thing. Authenticity is being. It is who are you underneath being a sister, a gardener, a community member, tall, a red sports car driver. Like, really, who are you? What are your core values and those types of things? Leadership is the doing piece. It's doing something about it. It's taking action on the truth of who you are in integrity so that you can blaze this path that is uniquely yours and go to the place that your heart and soul really want to take you.
Nice. I love that so much. And so when people start to develop themselves in this space of authentic leadership, like, what kinds of changes do they see in themselves, maybe in their organizations, when they do this?
Yeah, one of the biggest ones I see is in like clarity and confidence in decision making. So whether it's in your own personal life or at work with a team, it's the ability to face challenges and the unknown head on without, you know, hiding our head in the sand or busying ourselves in chaos of trying to, you know, throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. Mm-hmm. And really being able to face it with a sense of that inner confidence of like, I've got this. I really got this. I am built to navigate all of life. Mm-hmm. And to really understand that and feel the truth of that. We are built to navigate all of life. And so whatever is coming, we can handle it. And we know how to use our things like our resourcefulness, whatever, all the stuff to like get to the right strategy with the calm clarity of saying, this is how we're going to move. This is what we're going to do. The other thing that I often see is a change in relationship dynamics, because when we understand ourselves better and how we show up in the world and how we relate to the world, we relate to people differently. And, you know, if you have a triangle and one corner of the triangle changes, then you have a different shape. Like, you just can't not change the dynamic between people. And that is really fun to watch because, I mean, I can't tell you in advance what the new shape is going to be. I can tell you it's definitely going to change. And for the most part, where you're in a space where you're accessing truth and wisdom and compassion, the things that I do see are a more bonded, trusted team, people who are truly aligned at a deep level. And when we feel that alignment, we want to go above and beyond for each other. Mm-hmm. And we see teams being more successful because of it. Mm-hmm.
And what would you say to the person who is like, okay, this all sounds really good, but if I am real about how I'm really feeling, you know, it's all going to fall apart, or what will people think of me, or nobody's going to respect me anymore. Like, how would you address that with somebody who is maybe struggling? They just don't want to admit that they're struggling, and they're worried that like all the people won't love them or respect them or anything like that anymore. Like, what would you say to them?
Oh, I totally get that so much. Oh my gosh. Being at a law firm, I feel like is a quintessential environment for do not talk unless what you're going to say is completely polished already. Mm-hmm. Already understand the counter argument that someone might say and prepare what you would then offer as the reason why it still holds water, right? So the idea of like having a half-baked idea or off the cuff or, you know, just kind of brainstorming and being kind of loose, and that is just not available in that environment. And so, you know, at a meeting, if you're an introvert or you just are a bit processing slower than the person next to you and you just don't speak up, there is a ripple effect in the dynamic. And you might think like, oh, I'm not smart enough, I don't have good ideas, whatever, right? And so, you know, there's two ways that this, I think, needs to be addressed in my experience. One is from the structure of the system of creating that safety of feeling like you can speak up. Like, there is that authentic belonging piece and psychological safety that teams need to feel. If I speak up, they've got me. The organization has got me. One of their core values is X, and X means that I can show up as Y, right? And that takes time. That takes the leadership to do something about it. And then there's the inner work piece of how do I feel safe in my own body, in my own voice, in my own expression of my truth, such that I am willing to say what's on my mind and let the cards fall where they may. And if they fall in a way where there are consequences that I don't like, I trust that those consequences were meant for me so that I can find something more aligned for me. And that takes a hell of a lot of courage, mm-hmm. but it's the other side of the work.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me because I really find then when now, there should be a line. Let me preface it with this. Like, don't just, you know, vomit everything to everybody. But there's definitely a sense of like vulnerability when you are open and honest about this is where I'm at, this is where I'm struggling, that I actually think that your team will respect you more for than keeping it all to yourself. I mean, they're going to be able to see the cracks in the surface as you're, you know, losing your shit. Like, oh my God, they're going to know like something is wrong with you. But like when you can be honest and when you can be vulnerable, it's almost like then we really step into real leadership because we're setting that example of what a leader actually can be. I remember years ago when we first started doing our retreats, and we have one coming up in Sedona, which I'm super excited mm-hmm. about. But at some of our earlier retreats, I was leading them and I was participating. Like, yes, I'm leading the retreat, but I'm also participating and I'm sharing stories and I'm sharing this stuff. And somebody had pulled me aside and she had said to me, like, you know, Jennifer, you're the leader of the retreat. You probably shouldn't be sharing some of your stuff with everybody else. And I really took that to heart and I really had to think about it. But the more I thought about it, I realized, wait, I actually do this intentionally. Like, I show up and I share because I'm setting the example of it is okay in this space to be vulnerable and share your stuff. And then once somebody does that, it's like the ice gets broken And now everybody can actually show up and share. And that's part of what makes the experience so very, very powerful, that as the leader, quote, leader of the retreat, I'm not going to show up with my walls up and the ego, right? Oh, I'm the leader, crap, whatever. I'm here to participate. Yeah, I'm leading it, but I'm also going to participate, but set an example. And it's interesting to me that now from our retreats, that's probably the number one feedback that we get of people having these amazing transformations, because it's this safe space where they can be vulnerable. They can say what they're really thinking and feeling. And now we can like do that work. And so that's one of the things that I've seen where I was not criticized, but a little bit criticized. And I had to really give that some thought. But you're absolutely right when you say that it takes courage to show up and to say, this is really where I'm at, the experience I've had, this is what I'm thinking. It takes courage to kind of drop those barriers and speak your authentic truth.
It really does. And I think that what you model to your team by participating and being vulnerable, it speaks so much louder than just facilitating a meeting and saying, let's be vulnerable. Okay, now you go first. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, we forget that so much of our communication is nonverbal, and what we model is received a lot of times more clearly than what we say. Mm. You know, when we self-express by just saying what's on our mind, I mean, that is a really clear form of this is who I am. And it's modeling it because it is brave. It is vulnerable. If it wasn't, then it wouldn't require all of that courage.
Yeah. Yeah. I preface that with, I once had a client who he was in the financial services industry, and he sent out an email to his entire email list telling them about his experience getting a DUI. And that was an example of like, okay, I think he's like, I'm being vulnerable. I'm like, I will never trust you with my money. That's not the kind of story that you want to share with people, because he really went into graphic detail and you're just like, oh my God, this guy's a mess. Like, there was no way I would trust him with my money. So just, you know, a little bit of note there, a little asterisk at the bottom, guys, you know, show up, be vulnerable. But that doesn't mean that you necessarily have to, like, you know, tell everybody all the dirty details. So just kind of keep that in mind, folks, when you're hearing this show and like, oh, sure, now I'm going to go tell everybody everything.
Well, no. I think that's where understanding what the culture and the values of your organization look like really help, because they provide the boundaries of that container. You know, we value vulnerability. We value connection. We value you knowing each other as human beings beyond the role. And this is what that means to us.
Yeah. Yeah. Have clarity on that. Yeah. Have clarity on that. Absolutely. I love it. Daniel, such a great conversation. I could just keep going. I love this stuff so much. Can you take a quick moment and just tell everybody about your book, where they can find you? And yeah, just where can people find you and know more about you?
Sure. You can find everything that you would ever love to know on my website, which is just my name, DanielleSundberg.com. And my book is called Atlas of Being, and it's available on Amazon. And then I also have my first online program for high performers called Personal Mastery for Extraordinary Living that is actually just coming out now, which is when we're recording, the end of February.
Wonderful. All right, you guys, we will put all of Danielle's information in our show notes as well so that you can go find her online, grab a copy of her book. So excited to have you on the show today. If you're more interested in my new upcoming book, which is called The Apple Stand, How to Rekindle the Love for Your Business, it'll be out April 30th on Amazon and, of course, all the platforms. And then you guys know you can check out more about our coaching and retreats on jenniferdawncoaching.com. That is it, you guys. Danielle, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you. It was so much fun.
Awesome. All right, guys, that's it for today's show. Get out there and have a happy, productive day, y'all. Bye. I hope you found today's episode of the Happy Productive Podcast inspiring. Every successful business is formed by a set of small, consistent, and attainable steps. If you want to learn more, come visit us at jenniferdawncoaching.com to take your next step and learn how to meet your business goals.
On our website, you're going to find free resources along with links to the life-changing coaching programs that have transformed the lives of so many of our clients, including the Coaching Academy and our Unbreakable Retreats. Many of them started their journey by listening to this podcast. That's it. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for our next episode.
The She Leads Podcast Network.